scorecard said that we were outrageously expensive for a community college. Well, we're not a community college.
Alaska's educators worry about a new government college ranking. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 22nd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, cleaning up the cruise ship industry in Alaska.
Things have gotten a little cleaner. Passengers aren't saying the things that they used to say.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2013 PFD application with My PFD Info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Saturday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
President Barack Obama wants to tie college rankings to how affordable they are and whether students are landing in the workforce after graduation. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, some Alaska education leaders welcome the plans but worry about implementation.
The president says the Department of Education will formulate a new ranking system by the start of the 2015 school year. Those rankings, he says, will differ from private ones, like Princeton Review and U.S. World News and Report. The government rankings will rely on an equation of graduation rates, affordability, how much debt students rack up, and how much students will earn once they finish school. Speaking to students at the University of Buffalo, the president said the economy cannot afford the $1 trillion in outstanding student loans.
At a time when a higher education has never been more important, or more expensive, too many students are facing a choice that they should never have to make. Either they say no to college and pay the price for not getting a degree, and that's a price that lasts a lifetime, or you do what it takes to go to college, but then you run the risk that you won't be able to pay it off because you got so much debt.
Undergraduates at the University of Alaska Anchorage pay about $200 a credit hour. John Pugh is the chancellor at the University of Alaska Southeast. He welcomes the president's calls for accountability, but worries about the federal government imposing one-size-fits-all standards. Pugh says the White House's college scorecard system that lets prospective students assess which school works for them got UA Southeast dead wrong.
The scorecard said that we were outrageously expensive for a community college. Well, we're not a community college.
So he worries the new plans will be implemented from afar, with little local input. Tuition accounts for just 22% of the operating budget at UA Southeast. The state chips in the most, nearly half of the budget. And the federal government provides between 30 and 40% through federal student loans and Pell Grants. The president hopes to tie federal student aid to college costs, meaning the schools that charge more will get less money from student aid. Alaska once offered loan forgiveness to students.
It was probably the single biggest determinant in where I relocated after I graduated from college.
Senator Lise Murkowski says she opted to move back to Alaska after finishing school because the state was willing to erase 50% of her loans. The state has an asset that no others do, the $45 billion permanent fund. Murkowski says the state needs to tap into that bounty to bring back loan forgiveness.
We see far too many of our young people leave the state after they get their education. We've got a pretty good nest egg in our permanent fund.
Some of the president's plans will require congressional approval, like expanding an existing program called Pay As You Earn. That repayment model caps student loan bills at 10% of a worker's pay. But approval may be hard to win. Minutes after the president wrapped up, Minnesota Republican John Klein, who chairs the House Education Committee, warned the proposals could lead to federal price controls. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Every summer, a million tourists pass through Southeast Alaska. That's a boon to local retailers who rely on the extra customers to make up for slower winter months. But with lots of money being spent, business can get dirty. This spring, the state responded to complaints that onboard shopping experts were misleading passengers and smearing local stores by hitting these programs with a new set of rules. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez wanted to find out if these new regulations are actually working.
Just about every other store in Juneau's shopping district sells jewelry. They advertise diamonds and tanzanite, steep discounts, and free charms. But a sign on one storefront stands out. Don't see us on your cruise ship map? We'd rather not give your cruise ship a kickback.
We put up that sign is because a lot of people were unaware of the gimmicks that was going on the cruise lines.
Jay runs a store, and he won't let me use his real name out of fear of getting blackballed. He used to pay $25,000 plus 10% of sales to be part of the onboard shopping programs. Shopping experts, known as port lecturers in industry speak, were then supposed to refer passengers to his store. But even though Jay was paying up, he still saw customers steered to chains with stronger ties to the cruise industry, and business stayed flat. So he quit. Then Jay started hearing this from passengers.
We were told to only go to certain stores because the other stores are people who sometimes don't sell the real stuff and we are not responsible for it and stuff like that. So that's like a scare factor.
These kinds of complaints got so bad that the state of Alaska started investigating the companies who hire the port lecturers and give the cruise lines a cut of their earnings to have them on board. Ed Sniffen handles consumer protection for the state, and he says it wasn't just local businesses who were upset. Passengers were also saying they'd been ripped off.
Hey, I bought this diamond at this shop, and they told me it was a 2-carat, you know, something, and I paid $20,000 for it. When I got it back home and had it appraised, it was really only worth $5,000, you know, some of those kinds of things.
Port lecturers operate on cruises across the world, but Alaska is the first place to crack down on their employers. In February, the state agreed to a $200,000 settlement with Onboard Media, Royal Media Partners, and the PPI Group, the three Florida-based companies that put port lecturers on Alaska cruise voyages. The companies didn't have to admit any wrongdoing, but they did have to start requiring port lecturers to disclose that they didn't work for the cruise lines and that what they were doing was a type of advertising. They were also prohibited from talking bad about stores that didn't participate in their programs and from making misleading statements about sale prices and return policies. So, are these regulations doing anything? Right now, the Attorney General's office is reviewing about 70 recordings of port lecturers in action, and it looks like filming them is helping. Sniffen says that while things aren't suddenly perfect, most of the feedback from the ground has been good.
What we're hearing is generally that things are better. Things have gotten, you know, a little cleaner. Passengers aren't, saying the things that they used to say.
Before Cindy Dollar gets off her cruise ship, she's given a shopping map, a bunch of coupons, and a tote bag for her haul. She's vacationing from Texas, and she says there's serious pressure to spend.
Yeah, it's a constant kind of, I mean, if you let yourself, you can be barraged with the whole shopping experience on the ship.
From what she's seen, it looks like the port lecturers are following the state's new rules. They're putting disclaimers on promotional materials and reading from scripts that describe their presentations as marketing. They're still pushy, but at least you know where they're coming from. And so far, their pitch doesn't seem to be working on her. Dollar doesn't plan on buying from the stores that are being hyped up, and she definitely isn't thinking about making any huge purchases.
I plan to bring back a few souvenirs for family and my pet sitter.
She thinks a local gift shop will do just the trick. In Juneau, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
In Ketchikan, one cruise line is dealing with a whole separate slate of problems. Celebrity Cruise Lines is now sending passengers from the ship Millennium home on charter flights after the vessel experienced mechanical trouble on Sunday. After 2 days of being stranded, on Tuesday night, the passengers started to lose their patience and called police. Here's Ketchikan Police Chief Alan Bengard.
We, the police department, received 3 911 calls from passengers on the MV Millennium, stating people are getting unruly on the ship and they believe the riot was about to begin. Officers responded to the ship, met with ship security, and advised the 911 calls. Ship security and the officers contacted approximately 500 guests on the third floor of the vessel, and subsequently their peace was restored and officers left.
A Celebrity Cruises spokeswoman says the ship is scheduled to depart Ketchikan today. Cynthia Martinez says the Millennium will head to a shipyard in the Bahamas for repairs. Problems with the ship's propulsion motors prompted Celebrity Cruises to cancel 6 sailings. The ship was in the midst of a sailing from Vancouver to Seward when it had to return to Ketchikan, one of the scheduled stops. Passengers are receiving full refunds and vouchers toward a future cruise. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an attempt to set the world record in bum skipping.
Basically, you're seated with your feet out in front of you and you're jumping while you're sitting down.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
A 31-year-old man suspected of shooting at an Anchorage police officer has been arrested. James John Nick was arrested on a warrant this morning. He faces charges of attempted murder and weapons possession by a felon in connection with the shooting yesterday. The officer in that case was not hit. Police say officers were checking a neighborhood when an officer saw a man matching the suspect's description getting out of a Ford Explorer. A license plate check showed the vehicle was stolen. When Nick returned to the Explorer, police blocked the vehicle. Police say Nick refused to get out and tried to ram police vehicles, then briefly fled until a police dog helped catch him. The military has signed off on an expansion plan for Alaska training operations and areas. The Alaskan Command, representing the Army and Air Force, published its formal record of decision Tuesday on changes to the Joint Pacific Alaska Range Complex, or JPARC. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
JPARC is a massive area of sea, land, and airspace that includes portions of the Central Interior, South Central, and the Gulf of Alaska. It's the military's largest domestic training area, and Alaskan Command Lieutenant Colonel Mike Cabral describes it as key.
It gives us the capability to employ fifth-generation platforms like the F-22, like enhanced air-to-ground weapons that have longer standoff ranges, longer sensors.
6 JPARC expansion proposals have been selected for action. They include an increase in airspace over a military operations area south of the Denali Highway and a new MOA around Paxson. The other 5 are increased live ordnance and airspace restriction days around Fort Greely, expansion of restricted airspace around Eielson Air Force Base, more nighttime ordnance training during red flag exercises around Eielson and Greely, and designation of unmanned aerial vehicle corridors between training ranges and Eielson, Greely, and Fort Wainwright. Lieutenant Colonel Cabral says government and public input factored into the final proposal selected for action, including plans for expanded and new training areas.
By eliminating approximately 20 nautical miles worth of lateral airspace on the southern boundary, that took us farther away from departures and arrivals into Anchorage International Airport. It withdrew most of the Susitna Lakes and the Lake Louise area from being underneath the overlying airspace. And it also made the boundary concurrent with some of the existing overlying airspace.
Lieutenant Colonel Cabral says the public also influenced a plan for accommodating non-military air traffic.
We were able to incorporate the inclusion of a VFR, that's Visual Flight Rules Traffic Corridor, along the Richardson Highway as part of the Fox 3 and Paxson MOA proposal. That allows for the safe transit of VFR traffic while the airspace is active along the north-south corridor along the Richardson Highway, which is pretty extensively used by general aviation.
The state's largest civilian aviation group, the Alaska Airmen's Association, has been critical of aspects of the JPARC expansion and submitted specific comments during the public review process. Group President Adam White says they still have concerns about the size and altitude structure of proposed training zones and the expanded Richardson Highway civilian air traffic corridor.
while that is a possible mitigation, we do have some concerns about that because now we're funneling a lot of civilian traffic into a very tight and narrow corridor and having to look for opposite direction traffic.
White says the Airmen's Association will continue to advocate for changes to the J-Park expansion proposals during an upcoming review by the Federal Aviation Administration.
We've got a long road ahead of us still.
White says the situation could have been avoided by more face time with military leaders.
Sit down at a table and say, okay, look, what do you guys really need? This is what we really need to have to operate. Can we kind of come up with some compromises now instead of wasting our time taking something to the FAA that may or may not be approved.
White and Lieutenant Colonel Cabral agree that the military's request for unmanned aerial vehicle corridors is an issue that needs to be ironed out. Drones cannot currently share airspace with regular planes, and the FAA has been charged with finding a way to integrate them. Cabral emphasizes that although the military wants UAV corridors, the proposal is on hold until that happens. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks is taking a new approach to helping students struggling with depression and other mental health problems that can lead to suicide. UAF Associate Director of Counseling Tony Rumanier says a $5,000 grant from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention will pay for an online outreach program.
What this program does is it helps us reach out to students who may be isolated or reluctant to come in for counseling.
Rumanier says isolation is a major risk factor for suicide, and the online approach is aimed at reaching people who have cut themselves off from others.
The way it works is we send out an email to all the students that are on campus at UAF, and it invites them to take a mental health survey at a secure, confidential website. Students are flagged if the results of the survey are of concern. Then our counselors follow up with a confidential email dialogue with the student.
Rumanier says counselors provide mental health referrals and resources, but no actual counseling online. The goal is to get them into the UAF Counseling Center for a face-to-face session. The online program is in use at 25 colleges in the lower 48, but UAF will be the first to employ it in Alaska. Rumanier points to national data that shows a dramatic increase in mental health problems at universities, adding that UAF has witnessed a similar trend.
Constant increase in the amount of, the number of students coming in for counseling here. But we're especially concerned about the students that might not be coming in.
Rumanier lists several mental health risk factors at UAF, including a lot of students living alone off campus, a high percentage of students who are military veterans, students from small communities experiencing culture shock, and cold, dark winters that can cause seasonal affective disorder.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
A resolution to mitigate conflict between dog owners and trappers is likely to pass during tonight's regular Fairbanks Borough Assembly meeting. It will establish two new areas for dog training within the borough. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, it's a resolution that took 2 years worth of discussion between the Alaska Trappers Association and the Borough Trails Commission.
The resolution designates the Iceberg Recreation Area in Northwest Fairbanks, as well as an area directly south of Salsha Elementary School, as places where people can free run their dogs. Resolution sponsor and Fairbanks North Star Borough Assemblyman Carl Castle says the borough is not creating two new dog parks, however. Instead, he says the areas will be set up specifically for canine training.
People training dogs off-leash, things like hunting dogs and search and rescue dogs that need to free run in order to perform their duties, and obviously need to free run if they're going to be trained properly to do their duties. So to do that in an area safely, you really want to be confident there aren't a lot of traps set in those areas where the dogs are running loose.
Castle serves as a liaison between the Assembly and the Borough's Trails Advisory Commission. He says the resolution will not put an end to trapping within the borough.
Trapping and the regulation of trapping is a fish and game regulation, not a borough function. And so we're not trying to regulate trapping. The intention here is to not have any significant adverse effect on any existing activities that are going on, and also use this as a tool to educate the public a little bit more.
The resolution doesn't make mention of sled dogs, but Castle says that's because the designated training areas aren't large enough for activities like mushing and ski-joring.
Typically, a dog team would train longer miles, and they may pass through these areas. A 100-mile loop trail goes through Iceberg Recreation Area, so somebody may go through the area while they're training dogs, but they would be outside of these areas for more time than they would be within these areas.
The resolution also doesn't mention other popular trail systems in the borough where both recreation and trapping take place. Melissa Head is a longtime borough resident. She lost her dog to a trap near the Goldstream Valley last winter. She supports the resolution, but she says it doesn't go far enough.
Well, it represents a lot of work that was done between the Alaska Trappers Association and the Trails Advisory Committee. But it's not just enough to say that certain areas are off limits. Dog owners can encounter traps almost anywhere in the borough, and often in trails, on the edge of trails, where even leash dogs can be harmed.
Pete Buist is a lifelong trapper and a former president of the Alaska Trappers Association. He says most conflicts between dog owners and trappers are not the fault of trappers.
It will be an ongoing problem until the dog owners start obeying the law.
Borough code does prohibit running dogs off leash, but there is a section in that code that allows for off-leash training. Buist says he understands the resolution is the best option for compromise between all concerned parties.
We are willing to give up some ground that it would otherwise be legal for trapping, because, you know, we're trappers who are your friends and neighbors, and the Alaska Trapper Association is the organized version of that. And we still share some concern, obviously, that while training off-leash is allowed, there are probably going to be people there who just go and let dogs run loose.
ATA members have agreed to voluntarily curtail trapping in the designated dog training areas. Carl Castle says enforcement will fall under the responsibility of the borough administration. For KUAC News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
A professional rope jumper is attempting to break three Guinness World Records in Juneau over the next 6 days. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has the story.
Peter Nessler has been hooked on jumping rope since second grade when he saw an exhibition at Juneau's Glacier Valley Elementary School. In third grade, he joined the Judo Jumpers. By the time he finished high school, he had helped his team win 7 world championships. Now 33 and living in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Nessler has come full circle. He'll perform his world-class rope and unicycle skills for a new generation at Glacier Valley on Friday. During the show, the Ketchikan native hopes to set a new world record for most bum skips in 30 seconds. That's right, bum skips. Nessler explains.
Basically, you're seated with your feet out in front of you and you're jumping while you're sitting down. For this particular record, you hold both handles in one hand, so the rope's basically cut in half, and then you spin the rope so it's making kind of like a helicopter motion, but it's staying on the ground, and you're jumping over that with every jump.
The current record is 82, according to the Guinness World Records press office. He already holds the record for most rope skips on a unicycle in 1 minute, 237. Nessler hopes to set a total of 11 new world records this year. And yes, this is his day job. He's been professionally unicycling, jumping rope, and spreading a kid-friendly motivational message around the world since 2002.
A lot of people look at people like me that are professional or really good at something, and they just think, oh, you know, he's just born that way. And I'm like, well, no. I'm definitely one of the people, I don't pick stuff up quickly, but I work very, very hard. And the reason I'm good at stuff is because I practice more than anybody else at something.
Separately, he performs for churches and youth ministries with a faith-based message. He'll perform next Wednesday at The Hub, an after-school program at the Juneau Christian Center. There, he hopes to beat the record for the most rope skips while juggling a soccer ball in 1 minute. That's 31. He'll also try for the speed record for running a mile on 1 foot while jumping rope. The time to beat is 34 minutes and 1 second. Constant conditioning and performing hundreds of shows a year inevitably leads to aches and pains. Add the grueling travel schedule, and he's questioned his career.
You definitely have those moments where you're thinking, well, is this really the kind of job you want?
So far, the answer has been yes.
But at the end, when you get out and you're performing, you just kind of see that the look on these kids' faces as they see me out there jumping, and you kind of see sometimes those light bulbs kind of kick off behind their heads. It's like, you know, this really is what I like to do, and I love the opportunity to do it.
In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Wrangell will soon be featured in National Geographic Traveler magazine. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver caught up with the photographer working on the article yesterday and sent back this report.
National Geographic magazine is known for its iconic photography. Its sister magazine, Traveler, lives up to the high standards. Beth Wald is a freelance photographer. She's shooting pictures for an article on Wrangell that will appear in an upcoming issue.
The writer is Edward Redeker Henderson, and he is doing a story. He lived in Alaska many years ago when he was growing up and has come back many times. He didn't like it so much necessarily when he was a youth, but now he's come back and back and back. And so the story is he was back here with his parents. And so he was returning with his parents to show them the side of Alaska that he loved.
I meet up with her inside the Sheikh's tribal house. She's there for a performance. She quietly moves around the room, snapping photos of the dancers and drummers in bright regalia. She says that she listens for captivating stories while she shoots. Her job is to translate that into pictures.
I would say for me, it's the, funny enough, it's the, in a way, it's the stories that they're telling, which I love, but you can't tell that, you have to figure out a way to tell that visually. So I was trying to use the color and the movement and the patterns of the art and combine that in a way that would give a feeling that you were in the midst of a, you know, hearing a story.
Judging by the subject matter, it's sure to be a colorful story. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Jeremy Shea in Juneau, and Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
The Salmon Project. In Alaska, salmon are food, annual traditions, and a source of jobs, businesses, and community. Information on caring for salmon habitat or your weekend catch, plus salmon love stories at salmonlove.com. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Where can you see more than 1,000 entertainers from Alaska Native dancers to pirates? The Alaska State Fair. This year, everyone attending the fair can enjoy music that matters, like Pure Prairie League, the Young Dubliners, John McEwen, founding member of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and Terry McDermott and the Bonfirers. We'll learn more at thealaskastatefair.org. Music, fair food, and fun. It's what the Alaska State Fair is all about. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.